Hi, everyone, and welcome to Warning Track Power Hour, the MLB podcast that's part of the Total Sports 24/7 Network. This is Chris Hayes, the host and producer for this podcast and all podcasts across the Total Sports 24/7 Network. You can find this episode and all of your favorite episodes across the network on our website. It's totalsports247.podbean.com. If you don't want to go there, you can go to your preferred podcast provider as well. Search Total Sports 247, hit subscribe, and you will get a notification whenever we produce an episode across the Total Sports 24/7 Network. Consider subscribing to our newsletter as well. It's at weekinweekout.substack.com. It's opening day, and we could not have an opening day episode without Fred Dinger 2-3 joining us to talk about one opening day bets that'll come at the conclusion of today's episode, and two, how to think about your fantasy team now that it's very likely that your draft is over. Who might still be out there that you would want to add to your team on off of the waiver wire? What injuries have taken place that you might want to consider? What bullpen situations have changed since your draft that make other players more valuable than they were at your draft? So those are all the topics that we're going to talk about today. And we're going to talk about as well a little competition that Fred Dinger 2-3 and I have that it's going to start literally today that will be going on throughout the entire MLB season. And we will bring it to you on Warning Track Power Hour. Fred Dinger 2-3, how are we doing today? You ready to talk some baseball? How are you feeling about opening day?
Hayes, I love opening day. I did not have a hot dog yet, but I do love opening day. I think we are about 4 minutes away from first pitch. We're a little delayed here today. Yeah. It's first game's now at 3:05 with some rainouts, but it's a very exciting day. Opening day and Sweet 16 on the same day.
Oh, unbelievable.
Let's go.
Unbelievable. We'll be posting our Sweet 16 plays today, by the way, on X, Total Sports underscore 247. So stay tuned for that in your X feed. As we get started here, this idea of rainouts and postponements in terms of setting your opening day lineup. And this is the first topic I wanted to talk to you about before we get into players that might be available in your respective fantasy leagues for pickups. So the reason I want to talk to you about this is because we're in a league together, and we're in a lot of leagues together, but one of the leagues that we're in together, I decided to make a last minute lineup change, and I wanted to get your thoughts on this. So I have Starling Marte in one of the leagues that we are in, which is a 3 outfielder, 2 utility league. And initially I was starting him for the week. This is a league that set your lineup on a weekly basis. So the first period goes through this weekend, and then the second period is Monday. I initially had Marte. They got rained out today. I decided to sit him now because they are going to have a doubleheader tomorrow, and I'm not convinced that he's going to play both games of the doubleheader. So I sat him in favor of a Kerry Carpenter. So what are your thoughts on adjusting lineups around doubleheaders, rainouts, and postponements? Like, would you have sat somebody like a Marte today, depending on what you had? Or are you looking at other players within those games today that now are not playing and will be pushed tomorrow for a doubleheader and thinking about whether or not you should play them?
Yeah, for weekly lineups, I would definitely look at the players' scheduled games to be played. As a week long, you could have a player playing 7 games, a player right. playing 5 games.
Yeah.
And if they're equal in sort of fantasy output, you're playing the guy with 7 games every time. Mm-hmm. Similarly, with rainouts, games played, look at matchups. If you have a lefty in the Tampa Bay lineup and they're facing 3 lefties that week, he's probably not going to play
yep.
3 of those games because they always take their lefties out against lefties.
Always.
And then there are certain guys who, again, you could go on and on, but they don't perform as well against a lefty. So I think that's smart of you to do, especially with a guy with that situation, a Kerry Carpenter versus Starling Marte.
Yeah.
Kerry Carpenter could ultimately have a better year.
That's true. Yeah. I was going to play Marte. I was going to wait on Carpenter a little bit to see at the beginning of the season how much he would play. I'm assuming he's going to play every day, but just to see how he performs like in the first few weeks with Marling having the higher floor, so to speak, with Carpenter, the higher ceiling. But now that Marte has to be forced into a doubleheader tomorrow, my guess is that out of the three games, he's still playing three, as is Carpenter, but I don't think Marte's going to play 27 innings in 48 hours. I just don't see that happening, which is why I sat him.
Yep, I agree with that.
Okay. So that was my first question for you. So now let's move into other ideas around roster construction, lineup setting, and who is available. So it could be that you are in the circumstance where you drafted somebody who now has gotten hurt, and you either have an IL spot on your roster that you can use to pick up another player, or the injury could be significant enough where you want to drop the player altogether. If you had somebody like a Brian Wu, he is going on the IL. If you had somebody like a Paul Seabold, he's going on the IL. And there are tons of other examples of this. And those are players that you maybe targeted and drafted in your draft. So who is out there position-wise that you can pick up and could either be a nice short-term replacement for the first few weeks of the year, or somebody who was overlooked in your drafts and is potentially under-owned and maybe undervalued in your respective leagues that you could pick up now? So we're going to go a little bit position by position. I have at least one guy at each of the positions that I think could be valuable for you to look at. And we're going to use the CBS percentages of ownership to discuss each of these players. Fredinger, anything that I missed there before we get into some of the guys?
No, I think that it's also guys that you purposely draft guys on the IL sometimes. You get a little bit of value
true.
On them, and mm-hmm. you're ready to make that move ahead of first waivers to fill that, knowing that most of the time waivers are a good friend of yours during the season. And a lot of what you draft, the turnover, not as high for football, but for baseball, is going to be pretty high, especially on your bench. So there's that aspect. There's also the aspect that if you're in a league that allows you to fill your IL spot with a waiver pickup, you can do that as well. So,
true. It could be the reverse, If somebody's on the IL who wasn't drafted, you might want to draft him now, a draft and stash.
Right.
That's a good point. Okay, so we'll start position by position. I'm looking again at the CBS roster percentages. I was looking at lower percentages, typically 60% and under. I'll quote current percentages for the listeners so they understand the likelihood of whether they will be getting them. And they can think about that relative to the leagues that they're in, be it 10, 12, or 14 plus leagues, and then again, relative availability. So on the catcher side, the one that I have my eye on is Luis Campusano. He's 48% owned. He had a really good season last year in limited action, but he was extremely productive. In 49 games, he hit 7 home runs and hit for a .319 batting average. He's projected to be the starter there in San Diego. And if he does start, maybe he won't replicate that .317 batting average, but you typically don't need that from the catcher position. Somewhere around the 270 to 280 range will outperform 80 to 90% of the catchers out there. So I think somebody who's going to get regular playing time, regular at bats, and can at the very least not hurt you and be a producer in average is valuable off the waiver wire from the catcher spot. So he's somebody I have my eye on. What do you think of Campusano, Fred?
I like that idea. He's got some power, and he would be a really good pickup if he was not drafted in your league.
Someone else at the catcher spot too, just to keep an eye on, is Alejandro Kirk. He's 40% owned. He is a very good contact hitter, and that of course translates typically to higher average. He will likely be playing at the start of the season because Danny Jansen is going on the IL to start the season. I don't know that Jansen is somebody that most, you know, maybe in two catcher leagues, Jansen's somebody that you may have had, but he's not, you know, top 12, top 15 catcher in fantasy. But Kirk is certainly a viable replacement fantasy-wise, especially in deeper leagues or AL-only leagues to start the season. He's 40% owned on CBS. Let's go to first base. The guy I have my eye on here that is not getting a lot of buzz, but I think he's kind of, I don't know, I think he's kind of fine. And again, one of those high floor players is Ryan Mountcastle in Baltimore. He is 48% owned right now. He's going to get regular playing time, and he's shockingly to me only 27. Now, his power numbers have gone down, of course, since Baltimore brought in that outfield, I guess, move the fences back significantly. So we have seen the power numbers go down, but he did hit for a 270 batting average last year in limited action, 115 games. And the power numbers, 18 home runs in those 115 games. So not nothing. There's certainly other power outlets at first base that are, you know, the ones that you want to be starting. But in a pinch, you know, if you need a corner infielder or just someone serviceable on your bench, I think Mountcastle is a great option. I think he's under-owned at 48%.
Yeah, Mountcastle is also hitting third today in the opening day lineup. So
in that lineup.
Right, in that lineup. Another guy in the same vein is Josh Bell, 40% owned.
Mm-hmm.
Can give you the same type of numbers. Mountcastle probably gives you a better average.
Yeah. Yeah. Bell's one of those guys that you're like, can he replicate 2019 this year? Right. It's like every single year you're like, can he do it this year? Can he do it this year? I mean, his power when he's on is unmistakable. He can certainly bash. Let's go to second base. And this is somebody that I want to talk about. I don't know that I'm necessarily interested in. So I'm very curious, Fred, as to your opinion on this player. He is 41% owned. That is Gavin Lux. And the reason I'm so interested in Lux, well, there's two reasons. One, just because of that Dodger lineup. And two, this feels very much like a make or break year for Lux. I don't know if the Dodgers organization is feeling that way. It feels that way fantasy-wise. Like, it feels like if he doesn't do it this year in L.A., maybe he's gone to another team. You know, if he doesn't do it this year, they're going to – his value is going to start to go down, right? The pedigree and the name Gavin Lux is going to start to lose its luster if the production is not going to match that unearned reputation at this point, right? So he's somebody I definitely have an eye on. I don't know what he's going to give you at the second base position that isn't above – average. So what do you think of Gavin Lux? I think the real strength he has is being in that lineup.
Definitely. He's not going to play against lefties, correct? So they are going to platoon him. They've already said that.
Are they going to use Taylor? Is that what they're
he's going to platoon. He bats lefties, so I guess
so he wouldn't play against the lefties. Yeah. Right?
And so Mookie's going to move over to second. When they do face the lefties. And Lux, yeah, he was going to play short. Now he's playing second.
He can't throw.
So I think he's already got something to work on there defensively. Can he force his way into the lineup, in that lineup with his bat?
Yeah, that's what it feels like it's going to have to be, right? And it's almost like because it's going to have to be that way because he's going to have to play the field. Right, he's not DHing. His bats, I mean, not in that lineup. He's not DHing ever. So if he becomes a liability in the field at some point, maybe Taylor's waiting in the wings to take over that everyday job. I don't know. The Dodgers, I don't think they want that, but I'm not sure. But I think he's a very interesting story, and I think this is a make or break season for Lux. He is 41% owned on CBS.
Yeah, someone that is only 12% rostered on CBS at second base shortstop position, Bryce Terang. If you need speed.
Yes. he's somebody that I always have in my queue of I want him to be better than he is with the bat, right? Because if he can just get on base a little bit, he's gonna steal, and you hope that's going to translate into runs. Like Milwaukee is, they have a very interesting composition where they've got like a lot of guys who were young in that lineup, but they're not like that young, right? Except for Chirio. Teams like there are other guys, they've got a little bit more experience, and Terang kind of falls in that category. And yeah, if he could just hit like 240, you know, he could steal 40 bases. All right, let's move over to third base. I've got two in mind here. One is a longer-term play, and one is an undervalued play. So the longer-term one is Junior Caminero. He's 57% owned. He is starting off season in the month. Of course, with Tampa Bay, shouldn't be surprised about this. But if you have availability on your roster for a spot like Caminero, then you may want to use him as a week one waiver wire pickup and just stash him until he comes up. The player that I have my eye on who is playing is Michael Garcia at 47% owned. He's leading off for Kansas City this year. He can run. And with that, and being first in that lineup, again, a young lineup that might start to produce this year and live up to some of the expectations that they have. He could be extremely valuable and certainly overplay his draft status for the year. What are your thoughts on? I know you like Garcia.
Yeah, I like Garcia a lot, especially leading off. Again, the speed factor, and he qualifies at short and third.
Mm.
That helps, always mm-hmm. helps. And Caminero in a redraft league, yeah, he may be someone who you want to stash now. I'm sure in keeper leagues, dynasty leagues, he's already on people's radars.
Yeah.
Or even best ball leagues, if you want to go that far.
He's 57% owned, though, so he could be still available in shallower leagues.
Yeah, no doubt. So I do think, from what I've read, heard, that he's going to get that first call, should be up by May.
Mm.
And, yeah, I think he very well could still be in the running for Rookie of the Year if he does get the call.
So do you know if this is like a contract thing with him and like having to play in the minors, and you know that contract thing where they, I don't know.
Not officially, but yeah, there is a date, right? That they, it gives him an extra year of control.
Oh, right. That's what it is. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wonder if that's the case with Caminero, but yeah, he would be somebody that I would have my eye on. I think he could be very good very soon, and 57% owned. He might be available in those shallower leagues. So when we look at shortstop, the one player I'm looking at, and this would be a little bit of a roll of the dice, but I think he's going to get regular at-bats in this Miami Marlins lineup, is Tim Anderson. He has a long history of solid production fantasy-wise, and I'm kind of betting on the chance that he just gave up with the White Sox and is going to be the beneficiary of a fresh start in Miami. Now, does that mean that he will be the Tim Anderson of 2019 when he won a batting title? Probably not. But could he hit 300 again? I think it's possible. With the amount of times he swings, he doesn't walk. So he in those OBP leagues, maybe you want to think differently. But I don't know. He's only 30. I think the venue change, there's no spotlight on him in Miami. He's not going to be fighting with players on the field anymore, hopefully. I don't know. He's somebody at 30% rostered. If you don't like your shortstop position or have an issue there, or you're looking for a middle infielder in deeper leagues, I think you could do worse than Tim Anderson.
Yeah, he has a lot of upside for you if he is healthy.
Don't you think?
Yep, and he's playing baseball, not worried about the clubhouse. A couple other guys to mention in the shortstop category, that Jeremy Pena could have a bounce back year.
Uh-huh.
He's only 51% owned, and he's still on the younger side of his career, 26 years old.
Yep.
And also a late spring riser, Zach Neto, is – also 23 years old, 23% old. So he could shine for the, you know, the Anaheim Angels if given the opportunity.
Yeah. What do you like about Neto?
So I think that he's going to give you, if he's playing well, he's going to give you average. He'll give you a little bit of everything.
Yeah.
I just think that it's just a younger unknown that has that high ceiling for you.
Yeah. It's that high ceiling, right? I think, you know, he only hit 225 in his, you know, limited time there with LA last year. But I think that given more experience that he's going to hit for a much higher average than that. Like he feels like he's that type of player. If he gets accustomed to MLB pitching, he could hit for a higher, much higher average than that. Someone on the utility side, and this is not utility in terms of that's their position on fantasy, but I always like in terms of roster composition to find guys that you can play in a pinch, specifically in your daily league lineups, right? So on days where there are fewer games, number one or number two, someone with positional flexibility who's not going to hurt you that you can use as a volume play. I do like Luis Rengifo. I think he's predictable in what he will give you, a decent average, decent pop, and fairly regular playing time all around the field in that Angels lineup. So in I would say leagues of 12 teams or more, he's somebody I'm targeting if he's on the waiver wire to pick up just from the flexibility standpoint alone. So you can use him as a volume play and just almost like cross your fingers. Like when he gets in there, when you have to use him, that he has one of his more productive plays, but he's going to hit around 260. He's going to give you 15 home runs. And I don't think he hurts you in too many categories. So what do you think of Rengifo, Craig, or anyone else in like sort of that flexibility space that you have your eye on?
Yeah, that's huge in the daily lineups.
Huge in the daily.
Yeah, to be able to move people around, that's that. It's almost it adds value, right? It's not just stats in the sense of the fact that they're going to play and be in the lineup on an off day really helps you. I think of someone like Brendan Donovan, but he is 70% owned.
Mm-hmm.
But he's hitting leadoff for supposed to hit leadoff for the Cardinals opening day. And he'll be qualified at second and outfield at least, but he's sort of a super utility guy.
He could gain eligibility as the year goes on.
Correct.
Yeah. Yeah. No, Donovan's a good play, especially since he's leadoff. And you know, the Cardinals, I feel like I don't know, they've gotten rid of a lot of guys, but I still don't think they figured out their nine on an everyday basis. They have people that they can move all around, and Donovan, because of his flexibility, will find regular playing time, and he's decently productive when he does play. Okay, let's go to the outfield, and then we'll shift to pitchers. Three outfielders I have my eye on. One, Tyler O'Neill. He is going to hit for power. He's going to run if he's healthy, and I think he's going to get fairly regular playing time in outfield and DH. Yes, he is hurt yet again, but if he is playing, he's going to give you those counting stats. And he is, what, 49% owned, something like that? Let's see what the exact number is. I did not write this down. I'll get it for you in a minute, what his numbers are. So Tyler O'Neill is the one. The second one I like is Matt Wallner. I am concerned about playing time with him, but been platooning, and that's always going to be a concern with guys who are lower percentage owners. Oftentimes they are lower end because they are in a platoon situation. But Wallner is somebody who I think has really high ceiling and could earn additional playing time with the Twins throughout the year. And he has exceptional pop. And then the third player I have an eye on, not somebody I would draft or pick up on the waiver wire this week, but somebody I would watch a little bit longer term to see if he bounces back, is Mitch Haniger. He's the third one that I think could produce, maybe not at the level that we've seen prior to some of his devastating injuries. But I think the year in San Francisco was just sort of a lost year for him, and maybe he can regroup now. And if he does, he was a very productive outfielder in fantasy when fully healthy and playing regularly. So O'Neill, Matt Wallner, Mitch Haniger, those are my three thoughts on any of them or any other players from outfield that you like.
Those are a good three. I think it's probably one of the shallowest positions outfield because most fantasy teams are constructed of at least three, most likely five. So it's tough to find one right at this moment. At least you don't think they're out there, but it's probably the one position where you'll get the most free agent activity on throughout the season as well.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So I have my eyes on sort of a fantasy darling per se, I guess, Victor Scott, right? Yeah. He's getting a lot of publicity because of his speed. He stole 94 bases in the minors last year.
Unbelievable. Compared
to Ruiz, the Oakland outfielder who has a lot of speed as well. Potentially, some say Victor Scott is a better hitter. Some say he's not. Some say that he's the same player. But because Dylan Carlson got injured late in spring training, Victor Scott has been called back up to start in center field on opening day. So he's going to get his opportunity. He's only 38% owned out there on CBS. So he's one to keep an eye on. Any cheap power, I do like the Haniger call.
Yeah.
Maybe it's depending on how deep your league is. There's a lot of activity out there with Adam Duvall. If you need power, right?
Yeah.
Again, outfields could be shallow. He hit 21 home runs last year, drove in 58. He's with Atlanta, 24% rostered. So those would be my two that sort of pop out in deeper formats.
And someone like Duvall, you know, depending on Jared Kelnick, who has had no success maybe at the major league level or very limited success, like Duvall could earn that starting job regularly. Like Kelnick could be out of a job if he plays poorly in the first, say, 6 weeks of the season, and Duvall might become an everyday player for Atlanta. So there's upside in terms of his stats based on volume alone if Duvall earns that job by default, if Kelnick can't maintain his end of the platoon. Just for reference, before we move on, I've got Tyler O'Neill at 51%. Wallner's at 28%. Haniger is 23% owned. So let's go to the pitchers. I've got two. I'll start with one starter, and then we'll move into a little bit more of a comprehensive bullpen situation. So the starter that I have my eye on is, and this is one of these guys who I think has tons of potential, but I don't know that he's been used correctly throughout his career, which has limited his upside, but also makes him a little bit overlooked, is Garrett Whitlock. He is 30% owned. He's 27 at this point. He's had an unbelievable spring. 2.49 ERA, 22 strikeouts in 21.2 innings. He is going to be starting in the fourth game of the season for the Red Sox against the Mariners. And I think if they find some stability for it, like, he hasn't had a role ever since he's been with the Red Sox, and I think it has limited his production. I think giving some stability and having him start 26 to 30 games this year will do well for his confidence, and I think could well translate into some high-level production. I think he should average at least a K per nine, if not more than that as a starter, and he limits hard contact. I think he could be somebody who is under the radar right now and could sneak up on people. And I get why he is, because of the way the Red Sox have just, I don't know, not given him a specific role in the last couple of years within that pitching staff. So Whitlock's the guy I'm targeting for a starter. What are your thoughts on Whitlock, Craig, or anyone else that might be out there starting wise that you have your eye on?
I agree with the Whitlock role, that it's important to just let him be in the starter position instead of long relief or potentially closing or setting up. So I agree with that. He definitely could be a sleeper. I'm lying myself, Jared Jones, who officially made the Pirates team, I believe, on Monday.
Yes.
And he's going to start Sunday, their third game in Miami. So
first start for him. Miami, that's a good first start.
Right, 41% owned. Someone you want to keep an eye on. He may have gone in some leagues, but he is someone to keep an eye on for your waiver wire, especially if you go Sunday night. You're going to get to see his first major league start.
Oh, that's true. So Let me ask you this then. If his first start is before waiver wires on Monday, are you almost rooting for a bad start so people don't pick him up and then you go and get him? Like, would you look at that first start as a barometer for whether or not you would want to pick him up? Or are you more like, this guy throws 100 miles an hour, I just want him on my team?
I think if you like him, you're taking a shot either way. But yes, if you want to keep him, if you want to keep him under the radar, you don't want him to throw seven innings.
You kind of want him to suck, right? Don't you?
Like, probably average. You don't want him to suck too bad because then he could get sent down. But
it's true. Okay.
You want him to be average.
Yeah. Okay. Anyone else for the starters? You want to transition to the closer conversation?
No, let's get into the bullpens.
Yeah. So what do you got for us? I know there's a few bullpens that we wanted to discuss. And I think bullpens, for those of you who might be new to fantasy, bullpens going to be a conversation all year long. There was more stability last year than what we had seen in previous years, but that doesn't mean that bullpens are, I think, one of the most variable positions in baseball fantasy.
Yep. So it was stable last year. It was supposed to be more stable this year. And then 1 week of spring training changed the whole landscape of the position.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to have at least one, I believe, strong closer. And if you want to play the waiver game, you can do that because it's always turnover at that position.
Yeah.
Influx on at least 3-4 teams, whether they're already going closer by committee or they have a recent injury. And at any point, I always assume that the guy coming into play is likely has a pretty high chance of keeping the role.
Yeah. It's more than what you see at other positions and in others. Like, it's not just a substitute per se. It's almost like an audition.
Yeah, in a sense. If you've been groomed as that setup guy and the lead, most likely the injuries that are out there at this point are pretty, a couple months. So Paul Seale, right? He'll be out a couple months.
Some of them are longer term. So,
So Kevin Ginkle is now your closer in Arizona he's going to get the first shot at the job.
And Ginkle is, I believe it's 34% owned. So he is going up. There's no one else in that bullpen who they're going to give it to Ginkle, right?
I think Scott McGough had some saves last year, if that's how you pronounce his name.
Yeah.
But I'm not positive on anyone else. I haven't read about anybody else.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I imagine that it's going to go to Ginkle and we'll see because he has, closer experience as well.
Right. The next one, talk about Toronto.
Yeah.
It doesn't sound like Jordan Romano is going to be out long.
Mm-hmm.
However, it is an elbow. There was inflammation in the elbow. So he's sort of ramping back up, if you will.
Yeah.
And their setup man, Eric Swanson, is also on the IL. So the guy to grab at this point is it Jaime Garcia? Garcia. So he is probably going to get the majority of the saves for a week or two, but they also have Chad Green and Tim Mizza in the bullpen.
Interesting bullpen. Mm-hmm.
That might not be a guaranteed, I don't know, 3 or 4 saves that you were looking for. However, it's something to monitor with Romano and how he bounces back.
Yeah. Yeah, so maybe if in that bullpen, if you that would be a bullpen that you would maybe more likely target if you were in a league that counts saves and holds versus just saves. Because if you get somebody like a Garcia and he ends up being a setup guy and say they go to Meza as a closer or whatever, you could still get a counting stat with a hold and not lose that if you're just a saves league.
Right. And now the next one I have is Minnesota. So Yohan Duran went down. Looks like it could be at least a month, maybe longer. And the guy to pick up right now, there are two guys, but Griffin Jack seems to be getting a lot of the fantasy buzz. And everyone thinks he's the next in line. Brock Stewart, as you mentioned, should get some olds or solds, if you will. So he's another name to monitor until Duran returns. Looks like it says late April, but could be a little bit longer.
And there was one more that we wanted to talk about, or at least I wanted to talk about. That's Milwaukee. Right. I think Joel Papanias is going to get that job. I don't know how his name is 100% pronounced, so if that's not right, apologies. But I don't know. I think he's the second best reliever in that bullpen maybe anyway after Williams. And so I can't imagine that he's not going to get that role. And if he does, he could be very valuable. And I think because of the uncertainty as to who's going to get it, it's almost deflating the value of all of those Milwaukee pitchers. But if you take a chance and you hit and they do name a closer, that guy has the potential to get a lot of saves. And I think he's worth taking a risk on in any league that's 12 teams or deeper.
Yep. There are a couple other names there, but he should get the first shot, but they do have a couple other guys.
So out of those four, Arizona, Toronto, Minnesota, and Milwaukee, if you need a closer, how would you rank the best to worst opportunity to get some saves from those four, picking up the guys that we talked about?
I think you start in Minnesota, number one, and grab Jax.
Yeah.
Go to Arizona and take a shot on Ginkel.
Yeah.
Milwaukee, if you can land the right guy or continue to monitor it, or if you have the ability to pick up two of them.
Yeah.
Because Devin Williams will probably be out the longest out of.
That's yes, because we know how he's going to be out at least 3 months.
June or July, at least July, June 14th, which.
Okay.
Who knows? That could just be the early estimate before he even starts baseball activities.
Right.
So, and then last, Toronto, because it's supposed to be short term, Romano felt good after a shot in the elbow and the inflammation went down, and they will give him a long leash, I believe. Yeah. So as of right now, that's how I'd rank him.
So what about the reverse then? I think I tend to agree with that ranking. I might flip Arizona and Minnesota just because I think Ginkel is going to get all those saves, but I also think that Jax is a little bit of a better pitcher, so I'd probably put in bids for both, maybe like a 1A and 1B kind of thing. What about the reverse? Which out of the four, when they come back, are you most confident to least confident in terms of how they can help you this year?
I think it's going to be Duran, Romano, Seawald, and then Devin Williams.
Yeah, I think it's hard to do the reverse. I think, is there any of those four, maybe I'll ask you this, is there any of those four that if you had them on your roster that you would consider dropping?
If it was a redraft league and you were tight on roster space and you had other guys on the IL, I would drop Devin Williams.
Yeah, okay. He'd be the one, I think, as well. Seawald might actually be there for me too, because I'm not, like we were talking about, I'm not fully convinced that if Ginkel succeeds in that role, that Seawald will all of a sudden get it back. So I could see them working Seawald into lower leverage situations when he comes back, if Ginkel is getting the job done. So he would be the other one I'd be worried about. Romano, I'm not worried about at all. I think he is the one that provides stability at the back end of that Toronto bullpen. And I think the rest of that bullpen situation is closer by committee. And I bet it plays that way out until Romano gets back. And I think that, one, the injury is short enough, but two, I think he's the closer. Like there, and there's no real debate about that. And I don't think his job's in jeopardy at all while he's on the shelf. And same for Duran. Like Jax is very good as a setup guy. And so is Stewart. So Duran's job is safe when he gets back too. Any other thoughts on anybody that we missed on the waiver wire or anything related to IL, other pickups, things of that nature?
No, sir, we are good.
So let's transition into our season-long competition. So Fred Dinger 2-3 and I have decided to enter a separate league. It's a 12-team league. Fred Dinger 2-3 here will break down all the details of the way the league is set up. But for your information, we are going to be entering. So a lot of the leagues that we're in together have their dynasty or keeper leagues, right? And so we wanted to do something where we could put our fantasy chops to the test against each other. So we entered a separate league where we drafted players and we're in a league that we don't know anyone else in the league, but we thought it would be a great way to start with a clean slate and really compete against each other one-on-one. I don't think we've decided what the prize is going to be, have we?
We haven't yet. We will have to figure that out.
We'll have to figure that out, and we will announce that on the show when we do figure that out. But we had our draft. The draft was a little wonky, but we're going to put that aside, and because, you know, leagues aren't won at the draft, right? Your managerial chops year within the year will be what gets you to the top of your league. And so we had the draft. We are using Fantrax. This is the first time that either one of us has experience with Fantrax.com to house this fantasy league. So Fred Dinger, you want to give a little bit of a breakdown of the league and how it's constructed and how, I don't know, maybe it's because there are some differences as to what we're accustomed to in our other leagues.
Definitely. So it's a traditional rotisserie league, and yeah. It has 12 teams, and there is no IL spot on our rosters. So I'm not sure that when we both read the rules and drafted that we knew that, but there's no IL, and it's a daily lineup set, but you only get to do your pickups once a week using the FAB budget, which is your free agent auction budget, and you get $1,000 for the season.
Mm-hmm.
So you're bidding for your player every single week and hopes that you're outbidding. You know, you have to weigh sort of that buzz on your player and your need with your budget.
Yeah.
And what's available. Do you have a second option that's close? If you do, maybe you don't bid as high. If it's someone who's going to be a game changer for the season, you got to decide how you chop that money up throughout the year. And, you know, someone that may help you, like if a Caminero was out there, then he gets called up, you may use a good portion of your budget on a player like that who's going to come up and help you for the rest of the season,
mm-hmm.
rather than the closer carousel where you need saves and there's four guys out there that you're going to take a shot on. You're going to use a smaller amount of your budget, or I would, because that's going to be a constant theme of your pickups.
Yes. Yeah. And a couple other things too. Like, so for example, I unfortunately somehow did not end up with a legitimate second baseman. So I have to wait until Monday to get that second baseman. I have to go through the waiver process. So I need to put in a lot of second basemen and rank them by priority to ensure that I get somebody for next week. So I'll put in for, say, five or six second basemen who are on the waiver wire and allocate the budget based on preference. And that will essentially rank my priority, right? So if I say spend $20 on a second base free agent and then 10 on another one, the priority basically ranks it as to how much money you spent on your player. Other things related to this league that, again, we're going to be talking about throughout the season. This is infield with a corner infield and middle infielder spot to start. And it's a five outfielder league with one utility. So outfielder heavy lineup. And on the pitching side, you have nine pitchers that you can pitch on any given day with no restrictions as to who pitches. So no requirements for starters versus relievers. So you can adjust that as much as you want. So that sort of devalues that SPARP position, starting pitcher as relief pitcher, that you see in some other leagues that have specific designations for starting pitchers and relief pitchers that inflates the value of those relief eligible starting pitchers like a Cole Reagans. You'll see his value go up in those leagues where you can put him in as a relief pitcher. But when it's agnostic like this league, it levels the playing field for those spark pitchers because it doesn't actually even matter. So this is a league that we'll be tracking throughout the year. Any other comments on this league, Craig? How are you feeling about your team, or how are you feeling about this competition throughout the season?
It should be fun. I think we're going to learn as we go. It's a, like
yeah,
you said,
totally.
A little different. Without that IL, it's definitely a little different. My team overall, I like. I think I have five solid outfielders, but I did draft Jackson Holliday and Junior Caminero here. So right now, starting week one, or this short week, right, this four-game slate, I have not been able to adjust my corner infield spot in my lineup because I have Caminero and Holliday in the minors. I'm going to hold on to them, but I'm now going to look to the waiver wire to find a corner player and drop what I consider my worst pitcher, who I don't know. I'm going to wait and see.
Whoever that is.
Right.
Yeah. So I'm running into that same problem today. It's really weird in a five outfielder league that I only have four in the lineup today. I have Pete Crow Armstrong, who did not make the team out of spring training. And then I have Kyle Schwarber, who is not playing today because the Phillies game was postponed. But I have Jose Abreu on my bench to start today. I can't fit him in because of the one utility spot. And I have Vinny Pasquantino as a corner infield. And I have Josh Naylor as my first baseman. So that's where I was talking about flexibility earlier with guys like Rengifo, like maybe someone like a Justin Turner in this league, guys who have eligibility at multiple positions. This is where it becomes very valuable. One, in daily leagues, but two, where you need to fill a whole host of positions, especially in a league like this, where you only have one utility. Like Craig and I here in another league where we have three utilities. So there's so much more flexibility there. This one doesn't offer you nearly as much. So guys that can play multiple positions, their value just by that flexibility alone goes up in a league like this. All right, we have one more segment to get to. It is our pick of the day. So Craig, let's see, what do you got on the board today for MLB that you like for the listeners? I'm going to redo my pick here because the line moved and this is not right. So I need to do a quick refresh here. So give the listeners what your pick of the day is, then we'll go with mine and we'll close out.
Sure. I have two, but we're a little late in the day. So the first one folks may not get to. So I did like Detroit -1.5, the run line at FanDuel at +106. We have Skubal starting, who is a Cy Young candidate against the White Sox, who I think are going to be pretty bad this year.
Yes.
They are starting a young Crotchet out there, and he could end up being a very good pitcher someday, but this is his first go-round as a starter in the big leagues. So I do think Detroit is poised to make a little noise this year, and so I think they'll start off with a win today at Chicago. But my second bet is a late night game, and that is the Arizona Diamondbacks at home, again, a run line against the Colorado Rockies. It's Zach Gallen pitching at home. He was fantastic at home last year.
Yes.
That line I found is -1.5. Again, the run line at FanDuel at -105.
Awesome. Those are two really good. I love Zach Gallen. I think he's a top flight pitcher. And I think that matchup at home against Colorado is a very favorable one. So I like that. I combined two sort of favorites, slight favorites, but favorites nonetheless, into a two-pick parlay. I like the Rangers at home on the money line. I like Eovaldi at home against the Cubs. That's the ESPN game for those of you who are looking to watch some MLB today. And then the second game I like is the under. With Cleveland and Oakland. I think these are two pretty weak offenses in a park like that does limit runs. I like the under 7.5. And I think Bieber is a candidate for a very good season for Cleveland. We'll see how Alex Wood does for Oakland. But again, I think both of these lineups could be shut down, especially on, with decent pitching in this game. So Texas on the money line is -122. The under in Cleveland and Oakland is -125. Two-pick parlay there gets you +227. That is going to be my pick for the day. Texas money line and under 7.5 in Cleveland and Oakland. Anything else before we get out of here?
No, let's go get some hot dogs and watch some games.
Well, enjoy opening day, everybody. And thanks for listening to this episode of Warning Track Power Hour. We will be back regularly throughout the season, one, to track our competition, but two, give you some fantasy advice and some gambling advice on games that we like throughout the season. So stay tuned. Remember to subscribe to Total Sports 247 on wherever you get your podcasts, so you get notifications as to whenever we produce an episode. So again, thanks for listening, and we'll see you throughout the season on Warning Track Power Hour.